Blog Talk Radio.
For joining me on this Monday, December the 1st, 2014. It has been a great week. I don't know about everybody out there, but I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. It's always nice to sort of take a break, relax, you know, relax with friends and family and talk about good times and good things and make good memories. Sometimes that over the past week, it's been really hard to do. I know if you look at the news at all, it's something that really takes you aback, what's going on right now with our country. I wanted to talk to you tonight about what's going on in Ferguson and give you an opportunity to call in and you know, give your opinions about what you think is happening. You know, I'm looking at it, and a lot of people are reporting, you know, the mayhem, but they're not really reporting the solutions. They're not really reporting, you know, the truth. They're not really reporting the feelings of what how people are feeling. You know, it's one thing to have an ability to express your feelings, but, you know, to do that, you have to do that in an appropriate manner. And what we're seeing is not anything appropriate at all, as far as I can see in the news. But I was taking some time today to do some show prep for tonight, and I was thinking a lot about Ferguson and about my feelings and sort of what that has brought up for me. And I basically just decided to do something spontaneous. I recorded my monologue for tonight because I wanted it to be genuine and heartfelt,
and something at the moment that I was feeling, and I knew if I waited until tonight, I'd sort of be just sort of recounting what I had thought about today, and I wanted it to be, you know, in the moment, right then and there, about what I was thinking. So I want to go ahead and play this monologue for you. It's about a 28-minute monologue, and then it would be really great afterwards if you would call in. Let's discuss what you heard me say, if you agree, disagree, or what your feelings are towards that. And your feelings just in general about, you know, what you see happening in Ferguson, why things are happening, and why they've moved beyond the boundaries of Ferguson to across the United States and even in Europe. So I would really like to hear from you after the 28-minute monologue here. And if for some reason, you know, you're having difficulties or whatever hearing it, let me know. And the guests that are in the chat room, if you could let me know. But I think it's going to be something that you can hear right away. And then afterwards, if you would call in at 347-205-9620. Again, I would like to take your questions, your thoughts, your commentary. I really want this to be an interactive night where we talk about the state of our country at this point. So let me get started now, and we'll be back momentarily live, but I'm going to start my recording monologue on Ferguson.
I'm here to talk to you about Ferguson, which is a really, you know, it's a touchy subject, at least a hot topic for a lot of people. We have seen protests at the Ferguson grand jury made their announcement that Officer Darren Wilson acted separately when and killed Michael Brown. So, you know, I want to start from that premise. One of the things that we seem to be doing these days is that we don't want to look at the truth and accept the truth. You know, we really do have to make reality and truth, have to make a comeback on that. I mean, we have to have a basis to start from. We can't just dislike something and take it and champion that dislike for a cause. This is not the cause to hang, you know, your hat on. I'm sure there are other legitimate causes that could be brought out and could be discussed, but this is not that cause. What we are seeing here, though, is what's called social justice. And then the definition, depending on which dictionary that you look at, is the distribution of advantages and disadvantages within a society. And it's also a complete economic equality of all members of society. So basically, in other words, it's trying to make every person equal. Not giving them equal opportunities or equal chances, but to make them equal. And as we know, there's no two people alike. Even twins are not alike. You can't make people the same, no matter how hard you try. But we see the social justice mantra being talked about out there amongst the protests. And this is a communist motto. It's a communist slogan. And I think a lot of people who are out there in Ferguson protesting and across the country and now even in the UK think they've lost sight, really, of what they're doing. And I think they're being blindly led by those who are, you know, who have a communist agenda to work here. And they don't care what they do. They don't care if the people who are protesting, who think they're out there for a legitimate reason, are hurt or their families are hurt or anything else. That's one aspect of what's going on. Another aspect of what's going on is that people are angry, they're frustrated, and they're expressing their emotion. There's nothing wrong with that. However, when you express your emotion, it has to be done in an appropriate manner. You know, it's not okay to be angry enough that you go out and hurt others while you're expressing your anger. You know, we've seen in the protests in Ferguson, as it started out, minority-owned businesses were destroyed because of this projection of anger onto anything and everything around the protester. And they're hurting their own people, actually, meaning that, you know, there are people in that town, minority-run businesses, just like these protesters that are out there. People who are trying to take care of their families, struggle to take care of perhaps the elderly, or taking care of people within their families who have disabilities. And now, because of the anger that was displaced upon them, they've lost their business. They've lost their livelihood. And not only have they been affected, but the people that they care for, the people that they provide services for, all of those people have been impacted inappropriately because of the actions of those that took it upon themselves to riot, to loot, and to burn down businesses. There's just no way to look at this and say that this is the right way to handle something. Dr. Martin Luther King would not have handled it this way. You know, I was alive during the time that he was alive, and I remember exactly how he handled things. There was never a call for violence. There was never a call for looting. You know, he wanted to see people getting along. He wanted to see people accepting other people for who they are. You know, he wanted people to look at their character and judge them on their character and not on the color of their skin. And we have gone full circle back to the days of, you know, the 1960s, where we were. And basically, you know, how did we get here? I think we all know how we got here. A lot of it has to do with the Obama administration urging people to dislike each other, urging people to go out and, you know, make a cause happen. You know, telling the people of Ferguson to keep the cause going. Mm-hmm. You know, keep the cause going. We're all Americans. You know, are some people mistreated? Are some people treated differently than others? Absolutely. You know, I am one of those people. I grew up in the South, and I went to a school where we had black students and white students. And because of my skin color only, I was hated by a number of black people, and so were a lot of my, you know, Caucasian peers, merely because we had white skin. And we suffered for that. We, in the classroom, they chose, the African-Americans in our class, chose to sit on one side of the room. They wouldn't sit with us. They wouldn't talk to us. So we're on the other side of the room. Not by choice, but because that is what they wanted. There were also times where we were in race riots, that for all of a sudden a riot would start. I remember one occasion very clearly when I was in the lunchroom, as I don't even know if it was in high school, I think it was junior high, and I was sitting there eating and talking to my friends, and all of a sudden chairs start coming, you know, flying across the room, hitting people, you know, food is flying all over the place, and people are literally running for their lives. Also, instances where walking down the hallway, you know, white girls are walking down the hallway, and African-American girls or boys, you know, both, would set their hair on fire. And I was actually walking behind someone, and it happened so quickly that nobody knew what to do. And here's this girl in front of me with long hair, and somebody comes up and actually sets her hair on fire. Luckily, she wasn't hurt. She did lose a lot of her hair, but thank God it didn't, you know, it didn't kill her. Other instances where, you know, I'm sitting on a retainer wall with my friends talking during lunch, an African American ran up, and I don't know if you remember the hat pins, they're about that long, you know, long needle-like pins that women would put in their hair, I guess, I don't know, 40s or 50s, I'm not even sure. But those would be stuck in our spines as we sat there, you know. So when people say, well, you don't know what it's like, you haven't felt the pain, you have white privilege, you know, I and a fellow husband were discriminated against every day. based solely on the color of our skin. That's it. You know, and I haven't seen that type of rage and inappropriate behavior on either side. I haven't seen that since I was a small child. You know, for the most part, what I see, again, everybody's different. Everybody has a different experience. But what I've seen are people who truly, truly want to know each other, want to get to know each other, have no ill will for that other person based on skin color. But I remember when I became a psychotherapist, the one thing that was hammered into our head in the classroom is that, oh, you can't look for commonality. You've got to look at our differences. It's a must. You know, if you don't do that, somehow you're ignoring another person's culture. You're not respecting that person's culture. And I tell you what, I wholeheartedly disagree, because I think that we need to look at what we have in common with each other. You know, we can look at the differences and we can acknowledge them, but that's where it needs to end. We need to then look at these people and say, whoever they are, whatever skin color, whether male, female, you know, man or woman, we need to look at this person and say, I have a bond with you because of X, Y, Z. You know, first of all, we are all human beings. We feel the same heartache, losses, and love as most other people. You know, it's sometimes we look at celebrities and we go, oh my gosh, their life is so wonderful. They have all this money and they have so much power and they can do whatever they want. You know, at the end of the day, what it boils down to is that they're human beings just like us. They have the same human frailties. They have the same human thoughts. They love people. They don't love people. They strive. They don't strive. Whatever the case may be, we're humans. We need to remember that and not look at people as if they are, you know, numbers or things or something other than what we are. We're all the same. And in that regard, we are all equal. Are there differences? Yes. Will there always be differences? Yes. You cannot make people the same no matter what you do. The progressive, though, would have me look at it and say, oh, you know, everybody's been suffering. And you owe people something because of what you did. No, I wasn't here 200 years ago. I can't account for or change what happened in history. And neither can anyone else out there. Neither can the progressives. But what they progressives can do is they finally push their agenda. They tell people you're hated. People don't like you. You've been wrong. You need to go out there and you need to take back whatever it is. You know, people, what are people looking for? What are you going to take back? There's nothing to take back. I mean, I'm looking at people rioting in Ferguson, and now people have been hammered to death by teenagers who didn't like a person simply because they were waiting for it because one is coming out in the news. What are you looking to achieve? You know, who wrongs is going to make right? If you feel somebody, you know, died unjustly, which you can't, according to the grand jury, that is not the case. But if you have a feeling that something was done wrong, you don't go out and then do the same thing that you're complaining about with somebody else. We can't do that and survive as a country, as a people. It just won't work. You know, going out there and destroying lives and hurting other people is not going to resolve your issue. You know, if you feel that you haven't been given what you needed to be given, then let's sit down with an open communication and dialogue. Not one where we come to the table looking across the table in hatred and not wanting to hear the other person. That automatically assuming that person doesn't know what you're talking about. Automatically assuming that person has absolutely no idea about what you've been through in your life and how you've been with it.
I'm going to go ahead and stop that right now. I know that people are kind of struggling a little bit to hear, and I do apologize for that. Basically, my point in all of this is that we are all people. We somehow need to remember that. We need to look at each other, but as real-life human beings. And I think that we've gone astray from that. We look at, you know, what we need, what we want, and we don't look at, you know, the buildings that burned down in Ferguson. You know, those people, you know, that may be a thing, you know, a structure. But what it is, to somebody else, it's their livelihood. You know, it's their ability to take care of their children. Perhaps they're looking after the elderly, or they have children with disabilities in their family. You know, to them, that wasn't a thing. It was something that they needed in order to do what they needed to do in this life. And I think if those people in Ferguson and elsewhere, you know, took 5 minutes just to kind of stop and see people as human beings rather than it's all about me, you know, then maybe we could get back to what's important in this country. And that is, you know, sharing with other people, serving other people, loving other people, talking to other people, communicating with them. You know, we're all human beings. That's my point. We're all human beings. We need to somehow remember that. And I think one of the best things that I saw so far out of this whole Ferguson fiasco was the lady Natalie DuBose. And that's the person who owns Natalie's Cakes. She basically is a hardworking woman who had her windows broken out during the looting that occurred after the grand jury made their decision of no indictment against Officer Darren Wilson. And what did she do? You know, she could have just crawled up in a, you know, in a ball somewhere and curled up in a ball and said, well, what am I going to do now? I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to just let it go, and I'll just, you know, go sit over here. I have nothing I can do. No, that woman the next day went back to work. She had to go back to work. You know why? Because she had orders to fill. She had a purpose that was beyond herself. She didn't say, oh, woe is me. No, she went back in there and she did something. She made something happen. And, you know, she's human. She needed help. And what did she do? This strong woman reached out and said, I need money to help, you know, fix the windows here in my business so I can continue to do what I do. And I've got orders to fill. I've got cakes to bake. I want to help people. And I just need a little help. Can you help me? The last time I looked, she had over $260,000 on GoFundMe that people saw what she did, saw who she was, and donated. You know, how amazing is that? Another sign of who we are as Americans. We didn't say to this woman, oh, you're African-American, and, you know, you people, quote-unquote, you people are the ones looting over in Ferguson, and so therefore we hate you because we're all racist, and you know what? Who cares what happened to you? You know, that's not who we are as Americans, and I'm so sick and tired of hearing that. We are the most compassionate, passionate, caring, giving people on this planet. You look at any statistics, look at any of the records, and it's the Americans that come through every single time. They're the ones that get out there, put shoulder to shoulder, and help each other. We've done that over and over. Every time something occurs like that, all the Americans stand together. You know, one of the best examples I can think of in San Diego when they had the fire, people came out and stood together. People lost their homes. Some people lost their lives during those fires. And people didn't care. They didn't stop and ask, oh, are you African-American? Are you, let's see, who are you? You know, it didn't matter to them. They saw people hurting, and they helped them because that's what we do. That's who we are. And to say that we're anything else diminishes us. We're not the 1960s anymore. We're no longer there. And people, the race baiters like Al Sharpton and Louis Farrakhan, you know, they want to bring you right back there because it fits their agenda. Their agenda is to take down America. It's the progressive lie. And if I'm correct in my thinking, Louis Farrakhan basically was a protege of Malcolm X. And he sounds exactly like Malcolm X. He doesn't sound like Dr. King. Dr. King never, ever would have said, let's go out and loot, let's go out and riot, let's go out and hurt people. That's not who he was. That's not what he was about. He wanted everyone to be treated equally. Everyone, black, white, Asian, whomever. He wanted a world of biblical principles where people were treated as human beings. And I, getting back to Natalie at Natalie's Cakes, she's the perfect example of a hard-working American who basically needed a little help momentarily and reached out, and people overwhelmingly responded to her. I think it's just so wonderful that we have her as an example, a great role model for us all to look at, a prime example of Americans. I want to take a phone call right now. I have somebody sitting on hold, so let me take a phone call and see what they want to say about the discussion that we're having. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Susan, this is Dan Butcher with Pundit Press.
Hey, Dan, how are you? Thanks for calling in.
I'm doing great. How are you doing tonight?
Just great. We're talking a little bit about Ferguson. I had to stop my recording that I had done earlier in the day. I guess that was a little bit hard to hear, so I just thought I would pick it up and run with it.
Well, sometimes you have to do that with a live show.
Absolutely. And did you call it a specific thing in your mind, or do you want me to just ask you a question about, you know, kind of your general thoughts about what's going on in Ferguson, what you think?
You know what, just kind of, you know, just pick my brain. You know, I just called in, and we had spoken earlier today, and so, mm-hmm. you know, I've been covering this story from, you know, we've been covering this story on Pundit Press, and I've been on, you know, I've been on my own show, and on several other shows talking about what's going on in Ferguson and the truth behind it. In all honesty, we have to remember that a lot of what you're reading and hearing and watching in the drive-by media, it's not the truth as to what is really happening in Ferguson right now. They're picking bits and pieces and sound bites and people that I know, you CNN as an example, on the actual night that the verdict was read and then when we had the first night of, and the most violent night of the protesting and of the businesses getting burned and looted after the grand jury declined to indict Darren Wilson.
Right.
You know what you saw on CNN was they refused to cover any of the actual violence and looting taking place. They were focusing solely on what they were calling quote unquote peaceful protesters. You know, and that was the furthest thing
right.
from the truth. And then of course, you know, you've had the professional race baiters move in with the likes of Al Sharpton, and I'm very outspoken. You know, the only reason that Al Sharpton is in Ferguson, Missouri, hanging out and having photo ops with Michael Brown's family is because he's $5 million in debt to the federal government. He's got to raise
Absolutely.
Some funds. And
right.
so, lo and behold, guess what happens today at the White House? President Obama holds a meeting with some of the
right.
pro, quote-unquote, peaceful protest leaders. And if you look at the list of the people that he met with at the White House today, some of these were some of the folks that were calling for violence in Ferguson. And also, he met with the one and only Al Sharpton today. And
yeah.
President Obama also requested over $200 million in quote-unquote money to aid and help fix the situation in Ferguson. So one has to ask, how much of that money is Al Sharpton's organization going to receive? So, you know, you kind of see the profiteering. Race baiting is a multi-million dollar business, and people don't understand that. And so you get there.
As I recall, I think it was maybe last month even, they had a fundraiser for Al Sharpton, and I believe it was at the White House. And so this is just a continuation of that. And you're right. You know, I'm sure a lot of that money is going to go to him, and he's going to be involved in, overseeing everything and making sure that everybody is, the officers are now wearing cameras and how that's working and talking to the kind people of Ferguson that he wants to go around and talk to find out how they're doing so that he can continue to get money in his pocket.
Exactly. And I've taken a lot of heat, because I've written a lot of articles over the last few days over these subjects. I put three more up today. And, bottom line is the likes of Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, they don't have these people's best interest at heart. They truly don't. Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, these guys, and a lot of the other folks that are getting involved here, they make a living off race baiting. And it's, Al Sharpton, let's face it, Al Sharpton, and I'll just say it, Al Sharpton has been a thug from the get-go.
Right.
If you've never seen his appearances on the Morton Downey Jr. show back in the 1980s, you're truly missing something. And you get a true sense of what this guy is all about. He's never been a reverend, and I refuse to refer to these guys as reverends. And then it's really sad you have somebody like Jesse Jackson, who at one time was a true civil rights leader. You're talking about a guy that was Martin Luther King Jr.'s right-hand man. And
exactly.
I'm a student of Martin Luther King Jr. Martin Luther King Jr., he had his faults. He was a womanizer. But, I still consider him one of the greatest Americans ever to live for what he did, to lead the fight for actual civil rights. And to have somebody like Jesse Jackson, who stood on the balcony the day that Martin Luther King Jr. was shot and killed, Jesse Jackson held Martin Luther King Jr. in his arms as he was dying. And to see what Jesse Jackson has become today, Martin Luther King Jr. is rolling over in his grave, seeing what's happened, with the civil rights movement today. And in all honesty, the way we've progressed today, the civil rights movement, that we're seeing today, our nation has really moved beyond the legitimate use of civil rights organizations today, especially with what they're trying to do with the professional race baiting.
Right. And I was talking earlier about Louis Farrakhan. I mean, he's exactly like Malcolm X, and he even talks like him. He's starting to wear the bow tie is just like him. I mean, it's so reminiscent of the time period with Malcolm X and Dr. Martin Luther King. And they were totally separate. They didn't do anything together because Dr. King didn't believe in anything that Malcolm X was doing. He didn't believe in the violence. He didn't believe in the looting or rioting that Malcolm X wanted to do. And now we have Louis Farrakhan coming out today saying, burn this GD America down if you have to, whatever. I mean, it's inciting riot. And are these people going to have to, be held accountable to the law for inciting riots and doing what they do? And I think the answer is no.
Yeah, and let me tell you about Farrakhan. You know, I actually broke this story on Pundit Press 2 days ago on November 29th about the video. He was giving a speech where these comments came from. You know, we're going to tear this G-damn country up. Those those comments came from a address he gave at the Black United Summit International Conference at Morgan State University in Baltimore earlier this month. It actually he gave that speech. He actually gave that speech before the grand jury indictment was announced, or the grand jury decision was announced, and before all of the protesting and looting and violence started taking place. But what it led into that was it was the inciting the violence. You have to remember, you know, most of the people that were doing the protesting, the violence, and the looting in Ferguson, these were not people from Ferguson. Now, they were people from the St. Louis area, but most of these folks had come into the Ferguson area and were causing all the mayhem. You know, we had the likes of Farrakhan on the ground. We had the Black Panthers. You had the Communist Party. You know, you name it, the communists, the socialists, you name it, the same folks that were on the ground, you know, during the organized Occupy movement protest, during all of the massive protests that took place in Seattle a few years ago, during the World Trade Summit. These were the same folks on the ground in Ferguson, Missouri, inciting the looting, the violence, the destruction. People don't understand, and I'll make this point very clear. Ferguson, Missouri, of course, is a community of it's made up of 70% African Americans. Ferguson, Missouri, mm-hmm. was actually a model society of the African American community as far as business owners, entrepreneurs, and the community sustaining itself. You never heard anything out of Ferguson, Missouri, until Michael Brown was gunned down by Darren Wilson, who obviously, according to all the grand jury testimony, all of the witness accounts, all of the ballistic reports, all the evidence says that this was a justified shooting as far as Darren Wilson was concerned. And, of course, Michael Brown, you know, he had just, at the time of his death, he had just committed a strong-arm robbery where he stole the Swishers. He was under the influence of marijuana at the time of this. So you got to see the people, a lot of people in the media are not concentrating on the true facts of this. And going back to Ferguson, Missouri, you know, Ferguson, Missouri was a model community until this, and now it's going to be up to the people of Ferguson, Missouri to decide if they are going to continue with that entrepreneurial spirit. They're going to rebuild due to all of the destruction from outside influences, you know, that led to this. If you want to see, and I always use this, the prime example, if you want to see what happens when leftist community organizers, people that are turned to the government, to rely on the government too much, when the social and race baiters get a hold of you and come in and suck the life out of a community, Detroit, Michigan is that. Detroit, Michigan is the example of that, of what happens in the Black community. And I also stress, too, that and you hear a lot of the people speaking out now, especially members of the Black community on the conservative side, saying, hey, wait a minute. We've got all these people going around criticizing police officers for you know, using excessive violence and stuff like that. Now, granted, there are a few bad apples in every group, every organization. But 99.9% of the police officers in this country are here to do one thing, to protect and service and enforce the laws. And the reason that police officers have a heavy influence, have a heavy presence in these communities is because, guess what, folks? There's a lot of crime. There's a lot of black-on-black crime. crime. People are not talking about the black on black crime. They're not talking about the black young black men killing each other. They're not talking about the one parent households where the fathers have left. I always stress this. The black community, and you hear this from the conservative black leaders, they've got to address their own problems to help solve this. They've got to reintroduce family values. They've got to bring God back into the households. They've also got to work for better educational opportunities, better job opportunities, and everything that Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, President Obama, Eric Holder, the list goes on and on. Everything they stand for goes against that. They want them to be dependent on the government, and that brings the black community down. It brings the minority community down. It brings the lower middle class down when you have those type of policies. It's not just a black community problem. It's everybody that gets into those type of situations. But unfortunately, in the black community, you do tend to have higher tendencies of crime. And we just had a story right now, a very tragic story that took place in St. Louis and happened yesterday, was the beating death of a young Bosnian man in front of his wife. His wife watched her husband be beat to death by four teenagers, three African Americans, one Hispanic, beating to death with hammers. But we're not seeing that playing out in the drive-by media, because guess why? It goes against the narrative of what they're trying to portray as being, that the police are going around and randomly killing young black men for no reason.
Right.
It goes against that narrative, and so you're not seeing a lot of play in the mainstream media about that.
Yeah, and it's basically an insult to African Americans the way this administration and some prior administrations have treated them, and they are smart, and they're waking up, the ones that have been asleep, and they're finding out, they've been played, and they need to take, like you said, it's about personal responsibility and
yes.
about the truth. Whatever the truth is, you got to start from there. Don't make something, the way you want it to be. Make it the way it is, look at it, accept the truth, and move forward and try to figure out, what are the solutions to the issues. I think one of the biggest examples that the African-American community could know that, Obama has basically abandoned them, if he ever, I don't believe he was ever for them, but he was making them think that he was, is the fact, look at amnesty and giving $3,000 per illegal immigrant that is hired by an employer. That's what Obama wants to do. I don't remember Obama coming out and saying, hey, for every African American that an employer hires, we're going to give you a $3,000 incentive to do that. He basically, it's all agenda-based, and everyone, black, white, Hispanic, and everything else, should understand that whatever the progressive agenda is, they'll make you a part of it as long as they need you, and then they will let you go. And they don't really care about you. It's a game that they play, and they always have. If you look back, most of these people walking around in Ferguson right now, a lot of them are communists. They're there for their own agenda, and a lot of people are getting caught up in it.
Exactly. And, and you bring up a good point, and I always tell everybody that if you going back to the 1960s, and this goes back to Lyndon Johnson and all of the programs that have been introduced by the liberal left in the name of helping, and we'll use the black community as an example. All of these programs, they give them nice little names like Head Start or something like that, and they're saying, these programs are here to benefit you. help you. But in reality, these programs have led to the destruction of the black community. These programs have led to the destruction of the black family.
Absolutely.
You know, this is what this has led to. Affirmative action. You know, affirmative action is one of the most blatant forms of racism that there is today, of reverse racism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
right.
what affirmative action tells a young black person is, you know what, you're not good enough. You're not good
exactly.
enough, so we have to help you because you're not good enough. And that's the message that you – that is truly the message that you get from the policies of Barack Obama. That is the that's what you get from Jesse Jackson. You get a more blatant I'm here to profit from this from Al Sharpton. But, you know, the policies that they try to set up and the ways that they come into these communities, they come in and tell you, hey, you know what? You guys aren't good enough. Have to solve these on your own, so we have to help you. What it does, it instills a sense of worthlessness. It instills
right.
a sense of entitlement in these communities, and that just doesn't go for the black community. That goes to a lot of the impoverished communities that we have across the country. And once
Absolutely.
Those take hold, and you use the black community as the example, once those take hold. Once again, that leads to the destruction of entrepreneurship. It leads to the destruction of your self-worth. It leads to the destruction of the family unit, and it leads to the destruction of God being a part of the society as
right.
well. And once again, if you get back, you can't preach this enough. If they get back to these core values of family. Of entrepreneurship, of just having a little bit of pride in yourself. Once you get some of those basic elements back, all of a sudden you start to see a community thrive. And that's what we saw
Absolutely.
In Ferguson, Missouri, prior to the unfortunate Michael Brown death. And so now it's going to be interesting to see if this community is able to rebound. I know right as I came into the show, I know you were talking about the young lady who had her bakery destroyed in the violence and looted and stuff, right? And of course, you know they set up over $100,000 the last time I had checked in donations had come in to help her.
It's
over 200 now.
Oh yeah,
okay.
Well over 200.
So see, now she is someone that'll be interesting to see. She will hopefully be a shining example that she will rebuild her business. You know, hopefully O'Reilly's Auto Parts will come in and rebuild that O'Reilly store. Unfortunately,
right.
the Quick Stop has already said that we're not going to rebuild in this community. And you know, they actually closed all of their stores. In the Ferguson area the night of the grand jury decision, and they've not reopened them. So it'll be interesting to see if they come back in and some of these other one of the most telling statements made on the first night of the rioting and the looting was they had a young man standing out in the street, and he was watching where he worked it burn to the ground, and he made the statement. He says, you know what? Now I'm out of a job. I'm out of a job now. You know?
Right.
And then another telling video to come out was the guy that was on his way to work, and they were, you know, the protesters are holding up all the traffic on the highway, and he gets out and makes a stand and says, you know what, guys? If I'm late to work, I'm going to lose my job. So my question is, you know, here was the thing. During the day today, Jim Hoft at Gateway Pundit posted, because he lives in St. Louis, and I've had the privilege of interviewing him, the day after the grand jury decision. And he had a great photo up today, you know, showing, you know what, he had actually gone down and taken a picture at the spot where this young Bosnian man was killed and the memorial that had been set up. But there were no protests. The Bosnian community was not out protesting because why? They were at work. You know,
right.
They were at their jobs. And so you have to stop and think, you know, what can we do and there's a lot of work to do. Racism still exists in our country, but you know
right.
what? It's a different situation than it was in the 50s and 60s now.
Right.
But you know, we have to figure out now. We have to figure out educational opportunities, which school choice is the best option for that. Job opportunities and stuff
right.
like that. But once again, it has to. We can give all the ideas we possibly can. But bottom line, it's up to the people in these communities, the leaders in these communities, to step up and take responsibility and take the initiative for themselves and for their families and for their communities.
Well, you know, I don't know if you heard my guest from last week, but he's a prime example of what needs to be done. I interviewed Daniel Garza from the Libre Initiative,
yes.
and he is a Latino conservative Christian. And he goes into, you know, there's like he's in 8 states now. And they go in there and they teach Latinos that it doesn't have to be the way that you've been taught by the liberal left, that there's an ability for you to make money, be an entrepreneur, be happy, be successful. You know, you don't have to vote that way. You know, he goes in and he changes basically the culture, the lie that they've been told. And we need someone like that who's willing to do that in the African-American community, somebody who goes in there who's not Al Sharpton, who goes in there and says, you know what, you've been lied to by the liberal left, and it doesn't have to be that way. And we've got people over here that are willing to mentor you. We've got people over here willing to sit down and talk with you. You know, but we have to come, again, from a place of truth and honesty about things, and then we can work things out. We need that. We need that one person to step up, like Daniel Garza has done in the Latino community, to go in and do that for the African American.
And I think you are starting to see that in the African community. You know, you have the likes of Dr. Ben Carson, who is stepping up. You have the likes of
right.
Alan West, Condoleezza Rice. The list goes on and on and on as far
mm-hmm.
as the prominent conservative black leaders that are stepping
right.
up and starting to have their voice heard. But the problem being is that, once again, it doesn't fit in the narrative that the drive-by media, you'll notice I refuse to call them the mainstream media because, we have long since, you know, the nice thing in this country is there's still hope in our country. The majority of Americans still identify themselves as being conservative. But unfortunately,
right.
we've allowed a very dangerous movement to take hold, and that's the progressive movement, to make some strides in our country in recent years. And, you know, fortunately, we're starting to see the black conservative leaders start to step up more and be more vocal. And,
yep.
you know, and that's why, and it's up to us, you know, those of us in the conservative media, Pundit Press, The Daily Caller, The Blaze,
right.
Town
mm-hmm.
Hall, the list goes on and on. It's up to us to make sure that these folks that their voices are heard, so that they can carry on the actual message of Martin Luther King. You know, once again,
exactly.
Martin Luther King, what he strived for a colorblind society for his
right.
children. And that
yep.
it's up to us today to continue that, to make sure that that does happen, and to help out, you know, Dr. Alveda King, who I've been fortunate to interview in the past, who's Martin Luther King Jr.'s niece, you know, to give
right.
those folks the voice and the platform they need so that they can be heard, so that they can
mm-hmm.
go, you know, start to hopefully make some strides and gain some strength within the black community to help get them back on the right path. You know, at one time they were on a very strong path, but it's been taken away from them by the liberal left with the programs that they have, you know, let's face it, that they have introduced into these communities solely for one thing, and that is to buy votes, plain and simple.
Yeah. I know. And it's such a sad thing to see. And I, you know, it's like today we have become, you know, we're the mainstream media now. You know, we really are.
Exactly.
They're no longer doing their jobs, and all of us have picked up the slack and have taken off, and we've become the voice of America now, and we all need to keep doing that. And any time that we see those the African-American leaders out there who are trying to get the word across, we need to help them by tweeting out, retweeting what they say, you know, following them on Facebook, sharing what they say. Any time that they're at a town hall meeting and you know they're there, like Deneen Borelli is always at different places and working with freedom.
Right.
We need to be there and just tell people about them, because otherwise nobody will know who they are. They won't even know they're speaking, because that's exactly what the liberal left wants to happen. They don't want them to be seen or heard.
Exactly.
So,
and one thing, and the other end of that is, we also have to continue, we can't be afraid to be called racist for telling the truth.
Right.
And we have to continue exposing. We have to continue exposing Barack Obama for what he is. You know, it's time to throw away the racist nonsense, because quite honestly, when you get through all that, Barack Obama's a horrible president. He has been.
Yeah.
And we need to keep exposing Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson for what they really are, race-baiting profiteers. They make a living off of this. So we have to continue exposing these guys. And, you know, conservatives have long had a messaging problem. We tend to have the best ideas and solutions, but we've always had, especially our national leaders, have long had a problem of communicating those ideas to the American people. And so, but hopefully that is starting to get better. And we've got to hold the new Congress after the first of the year. We've got to hold the fire under their feet a little bit to remind them why they were really elected, so that they don't go back to the old ways.
Right. We need to put political correctness aside, because that it's the way to shut people up and to shut them down. And unfortunately, conservatives have been silenced by that, and they've chosen to allow themselves to be silenced by political correctness, because they're afraid of being called racist. And just like you said, we've got to put that aside. We've got to quit doing that. We've got to quit falling for the lie ourselves, especially in, you know, the GOP and how they feel that they should do everything based upon, you know, some false reports that they have from the other side and that don't want them to be conservative. You know, we didn't say that. They're listening to the liberal left. And a lot of them, I think, are liberal left, and we've got to continue to weed those people out until we have those people that follow with the values of America and what the majority of the people want here. And that has always been and still is a conservative value. And, you know, we need to work together. We need to sit down, have the discussions, and lead this country back to a better place than it was before.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
And all of us working together, you know, can make that happen. But we'll just keep writing our articles, keep posting them, you know, keep running our shows, and, you know, hopefully enough people continue to listen and they understand what's been happening and will help us in the cause to get the country righted.
Exactly. And, you know, just to give a shout out to Susan, you know, Susan has, she's a part of Scott's network with Contending for Truth. We also carry Susan's show on Pundit Press Radio, and she's one of our newest voices, and Susan, your show is gaining a lot of traction on Pundit Press, and we're very excited for you to be a part. And also, Susan's also our newest contributor to Pundit Press. So, Susan, we're very excited to have you as a part of the Pundit Press family as you know, once again, as we try to spread the good message of conservatism across the country and get the actual news and information, get the truth out there so people can hear it. We've got to take the megaphone to the mountaintop, and we've got to shout as loud as we possibly can.
Absolutely. And Dan, thank you so much for the kind words, and thank you so much for coming on tonight and sharing your point of view. I really appreciate that. It's been great. And you will be getting an article soon for me. I'll look forward.
Hey, you bet. Susan, it was a lot of fun. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Dan. Take care.
You bet.
So that's our show for tonight. I really am so glad that everybody could join in and hear. You know, Dan has a lot of good points that he made tonight, and he is really on top of things. And over there at Pundit Press, they really do a great job, and they're trying so hard, like the rest of us, to get the word out. So, you know, thanks again for listening. Thanks for all that you do out there. And until we meet next time, I want everybody to just be blessed and remember to always stand for truth. So take care.